This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of October 21st. What day is it? And I'm John Gibson, and with me on, let's get this straight. It's Saturday night for me, and I'm in Atlanta, and it's Sunday morning for my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing fine, and I realized this morning that not only time flies,
plane, yes. When you get on a plane, yeah, I guess you can't help it. At least I don't have wings. So yeah, there'll be a big news announcement coming up about my trip here. But let's get to the show. On this week's show, we've got Anthony Kay of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the games, and we've got some high heat, nice and sweet and short. Let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So on Friday, Jim and I both happened to be at Tokyo Dome for a game. Well, I was there for the pregame. Wait, did you stay for the game as well?
No. Well, me? No. I don't have that. I'm in and out, baby.
We were there for game three on the field, game four in your scorecards. If you're keeping score with the one win advantage that the Giants went into the second stage of the CLCS with. But Jim and I met up there, and we got a chance to talk to Anthony Kay again for the second time this season. And he's a New Jersey guy, New York guy. Unfortunately, you'll hear me talk about it at the end of the interview. He's a Jets fan, so I was teasing him a little bit about being a Jets fan, not being a fan per se, just being a fan of a team that loses a lot. So we got to talk to him about the games, especially the game he pitched. Got to talk to him about the way the Bay Stars are playing defense, and just had a really nice chat. So let's take a listen.
So tell me, I'm sorry. Okay, go. He's going to ask the questions. So I'm just going to butt in. That's my job.
All right, we're here with Anthony Kay here at Tokyo Dome ahead of game three on the field, game four in real life.
alternate reality.
So I said all season long the Central League was really close, right? Maybe among four or five teams, I think there was hardly that much difference. But how do you feel about the difference in the standings that you saw after the regular season?
Yeah, I think for the most part it was just kind of just who got hot at the right time. You know, we had, I think the last time I talked to you guys, we were in first. So I think it really was just like we got hot at the right time. Right now, you know, we're rolling so far, and you know, it's been really good.
Now, you guys had some trouble with the teams that finished above you in terms of records, wins, and losses. What do you think that gap was all about? Nothing you want to share here.
Honestly, it's just, I feel like baseball is just so random. Like, you catch a team on the right day or the wrong day, like, you're going to win or you're going to lose. Like, it's just not, there's no really rhyme or reason to it. It's just kind of, you know, like I said, like, who gets hot for the series.
All right, so you had a tone-setting first game here. Tell me about that game, because it seemed like you were a different guy in some ways.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. You know, it had the adrenaline going, the fans going crazy and stuff. That was, you know, the first time I pitched in a playoff game since college. So, you know, it was really fun to, you know, be out there and experience the atmosphere and everything.
Was the atmosphere that much different? Because people come here and they say, especially from the minors in the States, and they come here and they play, and it's like in July it feels like a playoff game because of all the constant noise.
Yeah.
So it was it ramped up? Or
I'd say it was definitely a little bit louder, yeah. I mean, like, anytime someone got a hit or, you know, a striker or something, I feel like the crowd was just a little bit louder than it was in the regular season.
Okay. Nope. Go ahead. I was asked what probably the biggest thing about your individual growth this year, maybe from the time you showed up in camp to where you are now, looking back, you think this was an important piece of where I am now?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was, you know, kind of getting back into the starting role. You know, the last couple of years I was either hurt or relieving, so I think, you know, I started off hot with it, and then I think I kind of hit a little bit of a hump, and then, you know, I was able to, you know, get over that a little bit and kind of push through it.
All right, so pitching a game opener like that is different, but you're already down a game when you take the mound. So, I mean, to me, you pitched well, and the team pitched well yesterday as well. But the defense is different for me. You guys made some plays last night, a couple plays that just really killed potential rallies like that. What have you seen in the difference in the team since the playoffs started?
No, it's been incredible. I think everyone's just playing with a little bit more of an edge. You know, it's like do or die. So I think everyone's, you know, senses are a little bit heightened and everyone's just a little bit more ready to go.
Right, there was some news earlier in the season when manager Miro went out to change your teammate, and he gave him a look, and people were saying, you know, in the Japanese media were going, you know, that's the kind of look a manager should always have, blah blah blah. But he's been pretty laid back now, and the team was making, you know, missing some routine plays now and then, but everybody was doing their jobs. But now it's like, bam, the switch went on. Does that being relaxed all season help a little bit?
No, definitely. I mean, you don't want to play tight. I think that's the worst thing you can do for you. That, like, if you make, like, one mistake, like, you're coming out of the game. Like, I don't think anyone wants to play like that. Everyone wants to know that, like, you know, if you make a mistake, it's all right. Like, move on to the next one. So I think, you know, having that laid-back approach is good for you.
Okay.
All right, so you threw game one. What's your plan for the rest of the series now?
I don't know if I can disclose that information yet, but
your personal plan.
Oh, my plan: get ready to pitch again, whenever that is, and then, you know, we'll see what happens from there. Whenever they call my name to, you know, be ready, whether that's pitching in this series or if we make the next series for the next one, then, you know, be ready for that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck. Appreciate your time today, and congratulations on a good job.
Thank you.
And see if you can change from being a Jets fan.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
All right. So thank you again, Anthony. And thank you, Jim, for chiming in. That was nice to do another interview together. We had not done that on the field together in ages. I can't even remember when. Eons.
Yeah, it's probably about the third or fourth time we've done it. So it's always a treat.
Yeah, well, we haven't even been at the same ballpark together in a while, so that was also a treat. So,
yeah.
Good to see you. And I know you were going to have some Giants interviews that you did, or at least one, in the future here. But this week we're going with Anthony Kaye. So what stood out for you from what you remember from this chat?
Well, first of all, I suppose it's going to be good luck for DNA, since last week we had Carter Stewart and then it helped his team. So maybe this will be the good luck charm for DNA.
I'm not taking credit for that.
Okay. Yeah, don't. Well,
I'm not taking credit for the good, and I won't take credit for the bad.
I got credit for jinxing him in game three. So, yeah. the ghost of Taffy Rhodes in Japan. You know, okay, anyway. No, what stood out for me was basically, what's your big adjustment? It was getting back to starting pitching.
Mm.
And you see that in Japan. Meet people making that transition from reliever to starter. Very usually it's going back to where they were. It's very rarely Japan changes a pitcher, but they often, they give players a chance to do what they do best. Sometimes they're sort of like, in that respect, they're sort of like playing for Tsuyoshi Shinjo, and there's the rules suddenly come off. The old rules no longer apply.
And
that's a really big thing. I've seen this over and over in my career, most famously with Jeremy Powell, who grew up as a big curveballer, and then he came to Japan, and he had gone through minor leagues and MLB, and basically they said, you're a big guy, throw that 90
right.
Well, in those days, 90 mile an hour gas, and you're going to be
in those days.
Yeah, back in the day, 90 miles an hour was about as fast as people threw, and you'll be fine. And he's playing around in the bullpen. They say, well, why don't you do that curveball to work here? And so he didn't reinvent himself, but he got that part of him that had been missing. And
they made the adjustment. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you see that sometimes here, and it's one of the things about being outside of MLB. So I thought that was kind of interesting. We didn't go into that in depth, but people get to reinvent themselves and find things. And he did in a big way. He did in a big way on Wednesday. I mean, I had seen him pitch a couple of games like that this year, but that was really the theme. Of the this series so far has been the the Bay Stars pitching has been a next level. The guys have been pitching as well as they've pitched all season.
Yeah, I would say it goes hand in hand, and that's why I wanted to ask him about the defense and
right.
And make a point of telling him that what I'm seeing is something that I didn't expect. I mean, I didn't expect Shu Uemaki to transform into Ryosuke Kikuchi a couple of times and make some spectacular plays with that body. I still don't get how he makes
it. Well, we've seen it. We just don't see it all the time. You know,
we don't.
We see it a few times a year.
Right. And so it just shows you the level of concentration and the desire. And a lot of times, you know, my dad asked me about it when I was young, and he said, I made some free throws at the end of some game to win a game. As you can hear, I'm at the Atlanta airport, so you might hear some background, some exciting ambiance as well as some airplanes. But he asked me about shooting these free throws at the end of the game. I said, well, nervous? No, I just wanted to win. You know, and I think that desire to win just kind of takes over from all that other things. I mean, that's from a guy who's experienced at playing in some games in which you might be nervous or in some situations in which you might be nervous. And I always think, nah, man, I just want to win. And you can see the desire. And I think we got that from Anthony as well. I mean, he was smiling on the bench after game one when he had to come out for a pinch hitter because they were trying to get an extra run. And he was literally smiling, and I thought, you know, he's really satisfied with his effort tonight, and he should be. He pitched really well. It was good to see him do that. And I did want to hear what he had to say about the defense. And of course, what is he going to say? He's not going to say, well, you know, our guys sucked during the regular season, but they're playing better now, and I'm glad. You know, he's not going to tell us that. And I would say they suck, but there were legitimate concerns about them not catching the ball or catching it and throwing it away. And we did talk to Tyler Austin off mic about his play going near the camera well, and that his wife was at the game, and that she really was concerned for his safety. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think
expressed concern for his safety.
That's an ongoing concern with Tyler.
but you know, he went over near the railing, and luckily he didn't. He couldn't dive for that play because all I was remembering was the play in Yokohama.
Mm.
During which he dove into the camera well and came up with a bum wrist and missed some time. It was a little bit of time, but he had to miss some time.
Yeah, that really was actually. I'll tell you the couple of little injuries he had after being healthy for most of the season, and were really what kept him from being an MVP this year, I think.
Right, right, and but he could be MVP of the series if he can. Help them get through. I think if they win tonight's game, which is Sunday night's game, and they get through, I think you know, he might be the MVP with the way he hit. But yeah, good to hear from Anthony. Do you have anything else?
You know, no, I think that was okay. Fine. I think he was representative. And as to the defense, I think, yeah, the Bay Stars defense was, it wasn't questionable. I mean, the guys can all catch, and they got some guys who can really catch, but you just expect them to miss a play once a game or twice a game. And if they're playing the Hanshin Tigers, it was like, you know, let's see how many errors there's going to be.
Right. All right. Well, let's talk about the game. So game one, again, Anthony Kay, he pitched six scoreless, and they scrambled up enough offense to get two runs, and they came away with the victory. And I didn't think it was shocking. I thought, okay, this is the kind of situation, especially at game one, when you can get that team that has been off for a while and hasn't been used to competing, and you're coming off the tough series. I don't know that it was that tough because they swept at Hanshin Land. So that, it was just, but you have the nerves and you get out there and you get rid of the nerves and you have that competitive fire and you move through. So I think it's kind of an advantage in terms of just being familiar with the game situation and the nerves and all that stuff. So wasn't a surprise.
No,
anything
game,
stood out for you in game?
Yeah, well, sure. The pitching, really, there was no real difference in the pitching in the first three games. The first game was Shosei Togo, and he was really good. And then,
yes.
And he surrendered a solo home run to, well, you know, they play at Tokyo Dome, you know, and it's not
that
like,
happens.
It's those balls to straightaway left and not like one of the Giants home runs, which was crushed, but most of them are just, you know, just over that short wall and left and right. So you know, that's going to happen. So, no, Kate DeSano hit the home run, fourth inning home run off of Shosei Togo. And then Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, who I found out on Thursday has discovered a love of the English language.
Well, he spent some time over there. He wasn't playing, so.
Hashtag.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough, but he was.
Might as well do something on the bench and improve your language skills.
He was all over my butt in English, man. It was like, whoa, where did this guy come from? And he had an RBI pinch hit single in the seventh inning.
Yep. And so for game two, the story again, the pitching for the Bay Stars, Shinichi Onuki was brilliant. It was like he was in the height of his power, or at the height of his power again.
Absolutely.
I mean, Tyler Austin went deep for in that game, and the defense again, superb. So they come away with a 2-1 win. And, you know, I don't know why they did pitch to Kazuma Okamoto late in the game. But you know, Austin saved them from that decision, getting a home run off of Tomoyuki Sugano, or Mr. Major League, I guess we should say.
Sure.
And to lead off the next inning, and that erased it. And then they held on again. The bullpen has really been super sharp.
Right. That was the big game, and Tyler Austin hit the tie breaking home run after the Bay Stars. This was a game the Giants really were unlucky to lose. They had one big lucky play, saved them a run. They had another unlucky play that cost them a run. And really the only typical scoring chance that Sugano allowed. He had one rough inning in the whole time, and the roughest part was a ball that bounced over his head.
Yeah, that little it was like one of those don't touch me balls, right? It just ran away from all the gloves because really wasn't hit that hard.
Yeah,
over him and through the infield, and I'm like, what? You know, but those happen, and it just came at the perfect time for the Bay Stars, so that was good.
Okay.
And then game three, 2-1 win again for the Bay Stars, but this one the winning run came across on a wild pitch, and I really think. And you could see the TV replay showed Shinosuke Abe, the manager of the Giants, making faces and doing the things that I said, you know, he doesn't do that during the regular season. And so you can tell the emotional investment in these playoff games because it made him make these facial expressions that we could obviously see. And he knows the cameras are on him. And so he was gritting his teeth, and that ended up being the winning run. But the biggest surprise for me was Yasuaki Yamasaki. Yes, longtime listeners, you heard me right. It's the guy who I think in the old days I would have gone up to him and said, hey, didn't you used to be famous?
Yeah.
And he fires two scoreless innings. And I messaged Jason Koskri of the Japan Times at the time. He's not just getting lucky. He's throwing darts. He's spotting the ball. It was like it's 2015 all over again, or early in his career.
Although it looks like they've either that or they've remodeled all the radar guns to be a little slower.
Yeah, well, remodeled. Okay. I like it. But he throws two big innings for them, gets them to the closer. And I thought that was the biggest part of the game. I mean, you know, that bridge, that gap late in the game.
Yeah, especially the eighth inning with a leadoff single and then the heart of the lineup.
Yeah, just superb work from him. And so I thought at that moment, I thought this really could happen, because if he's going to do that, I don't think the Giants are prepared for that. They might be prepared for people for guys to come in on the mound for the Bay Stars and they'll be able to see something that they're going to possibly be able to handle. But he didn't really throw them much that they could handle, and that was proven in the final score, and they win that one as well.
Yep, and then Kohei Morihara comes in and pitches as well as he's pitched all year. So it's basically this game is just one guy after another coming in and looking like, well, I mean, one guy's after another pitching really at the top of their game. So, and then they were lucky to get away with the win.
Right. So then we move on to game four on, was that Saturday?
It was Saturday.
And the Giants finally get their first win on the field in the series to make it a 3-2 series with DeNA still on the verge of moving on to the Japan series. But the Giants they break a tie in the seventh inning with three runs. And I didn't get to see this game, unfortunately, so I'll let Jim talk about the details. But I wasn't surprised that the Giants got off the mat.
No, and Andre Jackson pitched for the DeNA Bay Stars against one of my favorites, Haruto Inoue, of the lefty for the Giants, and he was absolutely dynamite. He didn't allow a base runner until he had a one-run lead in the fourth inning on basically a walk, a single, and a double play.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and he didn't allow a base runner through the first five innings, and then one out into the sixth, he allows his first base runner, and Yasutaka Tobashira takes him deep, and it's tied, and we're going, wow, this Bay Stars team is really something. And then we got a flash of the old Bay Stars, the kind of the team we've seen all year, in which they allowed one run, but you know, the run that was that Andre the first run Andre Jackson allowed was a beauty. And it was a beauty. Hayato Sakamoto had a one out single, and watching him run the bases and dive into bases, base after base, was really
fun.
Yeah,
I did see that highlight. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was about to dive into second base on a run and hit single, but he held up, and then he dove head first into third base, and all the announcers are going, man, 35 years old, cut that stuff out. And then the next play is a safety squeeze, which was beautiful from Giants catcher Yukinori Kishida. And there was really no play at home, but which ended up costing the Bay Stars, because the next play, there was another play at home on a sharp grounder back to first, and it cost him two runs because Tyler Austin went home, bounced the ball past the catcher, and two runs scored. There was also a double steal in there, but that was really the play. The Giants had really had this game. I mean, there was no reason they should have lost, but they lost in kind of the way the Bay Stars lost a lot of games this year.
Yeah.
All things kind of fell apart at once. I mean, they were living on, you know, like I said, they had one hit. They had two hits through seven innings, and they had three hits in all. And the big thing was Kyle Keller coming on in the seventh inning. Haruto Inoue left after six innings, and hit the first guy out of the bullpen, gives up a leadoff single, and with one out, Kyle Keller comes in. Hold on, excuse me. Yeah, with one out, Kyle Keller comes in, and he strikes out Tyler Austin and Toshiro Miyazaki to get out of the inning. And then in the ninth, Tai Seota on to close it, and he's got the tying run at the plate, and he strikes out Tyler Austin and Toshiro Miyazaki. So really good win for the Giants, and sort of that's, I guess, the game we expected to see this series.
Yeah, probably.
So for the first time the score looked like one we'd expect. Okay. Yeah.
So I would like to see the Bay Stars go through. I think it's good for baseball to see that third place team do well. And the last time we saw the Bay Stars in the Japan series, I believe you have that year. Was it 2011?
It 2013? Was. No, it was 2017.
Out of the third place spot, and they played a really good series. So
they did.
If they get through, it's going to be SoftBank again, and we'll talk about that series in a second. But if the Giants are able to come back, and the thing that one win gives to you when you start the series is that you can do what the Giants have done, which is lose three straight. Then you can come back and win three straight, and you win the series. You don't have to win that fourth one in a row. And I think that's huge, because I think sweeping a series is not that big a deal, and that's just three straight games. So I wouldn't be surprised if they come back. But I think it's good for baseball to see that third-place team come all the way back. And the reason is because it gives all those teams that finish in third place a lot of hope. That's why.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's a tough road to climb. You get all your games are on the road. And not only are all your games on the road, but the home team, they don't have do-overs. There's no, they have ties. And if the series is tied, the home team goes through. So the Giants only need to win one game and tie one. They have to keep the Bay Stars from winning one game. You know, they got to dig in and park the bus, as they say in football, and do it that way. And the last thing I would want to mention is this is we were in a situation similar to 2014 Hanshin Tigers, who came into Tokyo Dome and swept the Giants. But anyway. Okay.
All right, well, let's move along and make a two-seams transition and talk about the PLCS and the second round of that playoff series. And there just isn't much to talk about. Game one was a 5-2 win for the SoftBank Hawks, and they scored early and often. And the only thing that I could say about this game was I was surprised to see how poorly Hiromi Ito pitched in this game. It was just weird. He didn't seem to be himself. I thought he was going to pitch in the first stage or first round, and he didn't. And it seemed like they were maybe gambling a little bit and saving him. I don't ever want to say that, but we talked about the fact that he pitched late in the season and that he didn't look – and he pitched okay in that game because they were trying to get him a win, but I don't know why they waited so long to pitch him again. I think it impacted him. He didn't pitch well, and they end up losing. That was the thing that stood out for me in this.
Yeah,
game.
He gave up 10 hits in 5 2/3 innings. Struck out. I mean, it was a real kind of an Ito game. I mean, when he's bad, he's like that. But when he's good, he strikes out a lot. He struck out a lot of guys and was bad. Struck out 9 in 5 2/3 innings.
I mean, yeah, and I don't think
who strikes out 9 guys in 5 innings and allows 4 runs, you know? I mean,
yeah. It's weird.
It is.
And I thought, I thought again, they really weren't in this series, but they got off to a bad start, and then in game 2 it kind of got worse because Hotaka Yamakawa turned into the Alfredo Despaigne role, or went to that role, which is he kind of plays dead and works his way through the season with injuries and everything. But when the playoffs come around, you can't get him out, and he's hitting the ball over the wall. And he homered twice in this game, and it was a 7-2 win for the Hawks. And after that, you really felt like the series was pretty much over.
Did well. It was again. Well, this was a fairly close game until the middle, and then it was just like, wow, there it goes again, you know. Kondo and Yamakawa were really this Kensuke Kondo, who came back, and he had I can't remember what injury it was. It was an ankle or a foot.
Yeah, some lower body half foot, or
it was a leg injury that he hurt
late in the season.
Yeah, I think about the last day of September or something. It was about that. It was the final 10 or 15
days.
Yeah,
with walking boot and crutches and everything. And it was he, and it was also for the Bay Stars, Toshiro Miyazaki. I thought those two guys were not going to play.
Right.
And I about Yuki Yanagita coming back for the Hawks either, but everybody's playing, so there are no excuses on either
side.
Well,
the Hawks, so. It was like, yes, well, Yuki Yanagita came back in the last week of the season, and Kensuke Kondo came back to start the postseason, and they're like going, okay, we're here. What you got?
Yeah. Well, the answer was not much. No. And as we move on to the clincher, and friend of the program, Carter Stewart Jr. gets the start. He gets the win in the clincher, 3-2 game. And yeah, I thought that the Hawks kind of played with their food a little bit in the middle of this game and let the Fighters get back and get those runs to get back into the game. But they held them off, and the bullpen was pretty good. I wouldn't say great, but good enough, obviously, for a 3-2 win, and they move on. And it just seemed like it was over before it started. And I was waiting for Shinjo, Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the manager of the Fighters, to do something weird, to do something goofy, to do something exciting. And we just he didn't really have a lot of opportunity. You know, there weren't great combinations for him to put on plays. There weren't guys who were going to steal bases. And they just didn't have a lot of ops out there. They just kind of got beat down.
The weird thing about this game was that the first inning, you see this sometimes. You'll see a pitcher and he'll go a couple innings and you'll go like, wow, this guy's untouchable. And he looks like a different guy was wearing his uniform in the third inning. And that was really Carter Stewart Jr. The first inning, I'm thinking, man, the Fighters are going to be lucky to put the bat on the ball in this game. Mm. He was so overpowering. And then he came out in the second inning like, who's been sleeping in my bed? Who's been, what lefty's been pitching on my mound? You know? And it was completely different. Now, he didn't give up a hit, but the runner that reached on an error could well have been a hit. The ball was smoked, and it came off of Kenta Maeda's glove at shortstop. You know, he was unable to get it out cleanly because it was hit so hard. It came out before he was ready.
Right.
And, you know, you could see in that inning that it was not the same Carter Stewart. And then the third inning, when he was leading 2-0, he, you know, we saw that. He gave up a home run to Torii Fushimi. Yeah?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Yes. And things kind of went downhill. But then things went downhill from there. But he came back and he battled through the fourth inning and he found himself in the fifth. And then they said, you know, you're done after 86 pitches. So he labored a little to get there, but he did get the playoff win that he told me he wanted, you know, told me in December that he was really keen to get. So he's got it. Even if wins don't matter, he did contribute.
Well, the 10th win doesn't matter, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying, yeah. I mean, the team wins, that's the big thing, but he pitched well enough to get it. And the bullpen was fantastic, and the Fighters pitching was very, very good in this game. I mean, other than giving up, they allowed 7 hits, and 4 of those were to Kensuke Kondo. So mm-hmm. I guess he's
yeah.
back.
He just went wild. Yeah, he's back. All right. Yeah, it was very much domination, and they didn't even need Yanagita to do that much, and. They looked like a machine. So I talked to one of our colleagues whom you know fairly well at the office, a big Giants fan, and I said the Giants are not going to win the Japan Series. He said, yeah, the Hawks are going to win, and this was a couple weeks ago. So they played like it in this series. They look like a well-oiled machine, but you got to get out there and play the games. We don't know who their opponent is going to be, so. But it'll be fun to talk about it until it happens. But I'd like Indeed. To see, like I said, the Bay Stars go through and play the Hawks. I think that would be fun because of what we saw with those two teams last time. But if it's the Giants and the Hawks, it's a classic matchup.
It is.
I think the Hawks win either way.
Yeah, the Giants right. haven't beaten the Hawks in the postseason since 2000.
Mm.
When they came from behind to win that series. That was the Brain Surgeon series.
Brain Surgeon series? Meaning?
2000. That was the year the Hawks had, they couldn't use Fukuoka Dome on Tuesday, on the Pacific League's Tuesday game 3 day, because they had rented out 3 years in advance. When they were really lousy, they rented out Fukuoka Dome to host a Brain Surgeon convention.
Okay. I remember the details. Yes.
Obviously, the brain surgeons weren't working for the Hawks.
Hashtag hi.
Or they needed them to work for them.
Well, they needed them, and the guy who rented out the stadium eventually lost his job over that.
Well, that happens. That happens.
Where he went on to other teams to cause trouble. So he was.
So, all right. Well, looking forward to the Japan series when it starts. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. This one comes to us from Eugene in Waco in Texas and via email. And he says, thank you, as always, to you and Jim for your work. I have followed Japanese baseball for a number of years now, and your podcast has really helped connect me as someone who doesn't speak Japanese with NPB. There's no the in front of NPB, people. No the. With the demise of my Oakland Athletics, I think my baseball fandom will exclusively be NPB going forward. Anyway, my question is one I ask at the end of every season: which teams got the most out of their foreign players and which teams got the least? Why do we often see the same teams year after year struggle with their imports? Thank you again. All right, so I didn't do any real research. I just went off memory, which is fairly easy, I think, in this particular question, because I think it's obvious that I think the Swallows got clearly a lot of great production from all of their imports, from the hitters to the pitchers. Maybe not as much as the previous season, but with Domingo Santana hitting rockets all over the place and Jose Osuna hitting as well as he did. And then Cy Snead, he didn't win as many games, I think, as he has in the past. And I think he even got dropped out of the rotation. But Miguel Yajure, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. We need you, Claudio. But he was really good early on in the season. And then they even got some guys out of the bullpen to do to take a lot of innings for them. So I think it was them. But I think, surprisingly, I think number two for me was the Bay Stars. And you look at Anthony Kay, you look at Andre Jackson getting playoff starts. They were very consistent throughout the season. Obviously, Tyler Austin has had one of his best seasons, if not his best season in Japan, at least staying healthy for most of it. I don't think he matched his career high in Japan for games played, but he's right there, very close, very high production.
JB Wendelken also.
JB Wendelken and Rowan Wick. I think when you add all those guys in, I think they're right there with Yakult. They might even be neck and neck tied.
It might have been better.
I think you could nudge them ahead. Did you have anybody?
No, well, I think the Swallows, it's interesting because if you've been following Japanese baseball a long time for years and years, you know, the team that always seemed to get the best foreign production was DeNA.
Mm-hmm.
And the Swallows have sort of took over that mantle along with the Hiroshima Carp, who used to be really, really good. And they've run through a dry patch in the last few years. But no, the Swallows are pretty much, that's their MO. They get their international department is really good at getting guys who can do the job and who get rewarded with long-term contracts.
Agreed. The team with the least, I don't know, I'm sorry, one more team I wanted to mention was the Giants, because I thought with Foster Griffin, Ilya Hernandez, Coco Montes, when he came around, Kyle Keller, Alberto Baradenaro, I think they got a lot of outings, a lot of mound innings from their arms. I think they got a good enough production from the players that I would put them in the conversation, but
well, that's a shock because the Giants have been one of the worst. They haven't been one of the worst, but they've been
consistently missing, their form.
Yeah, considering they spend more money on their import players than anybody else, the fact that they're never even better than ordinary, is disappointing.
Sure,
but this year they were good.
And the teams with the least, I guess, look at the teams that didn't make the playoffs. So, obviously, the Carp had some high hopes for guys early on in the preseason and then into the season, but they didn't produce, and then they ended up not really having. They had a lot of nights where they didn't have imports out there at all. Same with the Dragons; they had nights where they didn't start Orlando Caliste, and he didn't pinch hit or anything. And they didn't really have any production from their imports unless Rydell Martinez came on to save it. So I would put them up there.
But, Rock Tan.
Yeah, the Eagles. Yes, yeah. And the Eagles struggled. So I don't know which one had the least.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Cebu, but no, Cebu at least, they got a little bit. They got a few
more innings, out of their pitchers. I guess it would have to be the Eagles. I would just say the Eagles.
Michael Franco was not fit and playing a lot. And it was basically, if John Turley isn't pitching, then they got nothing.
Yes, but always a fun question. Apologies that I wasn't able to do any kind of scientific research. It has been a busy week, and like I said, I'm recording this on the floor here in the Atlanta airport, and I got to go catch my flight, so we got to wrap it up here. But appreciate you guys listening. I'm looking forward to the Japan series. I'm not sure how many of those games I'll be watching, but I'll be watching as many as I can. Thanks a lot for listening. Anybody else who has a question, and we appreciate you, Eugene and Waco. Thank you so much. Anyone else with a question, hit us up on x.com @JBWPodcast with the hashtag High Heat. You can send an email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or look for us on the Facebook page. Leave us a message or a comment there. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your postseason.
And see you at the ballparks in whatever country you may be.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag HighHeat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.